It's another episode of the Anxiety Rx podcast. Thanks for being with me. I am Dr. Russell Kennedy, a medical doctor and a neuroscientist who struggled with anxiety for many, many years. And I don't want you to have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did. So today, this episode is all about worry. And you probably heard me say a number of times that the reason we worry is to make the uncertain appear more certain. Because uncertainty intolerance is really what anxiety is. If we're uncertain of something, we are more likely to become fearful. We are more likely to develop this alarm reaction in our bodies. And the worries act kind of like ninjas in a way. They hide in plain sight. They're right there if we choose to see them. But often they're such a source of, I don't want to say this, but comfort to us because they make the uncertain appear more certain. That's what worries do. They make the uncertain appear more certain. And when we did this in childhood, it gave us a sense of control over an uncontrollable situation because as children, we didn't have a control over the situation. We didn't know what was going to happen. So what we did was we went into our heads and we worried to kind of gain some imaginary control over the situation. That's why we worry. It makes the uncertain appear more certain. Also, on some level, we don't see it because we don't want to see it. It's our coping strategy. Worry is something that kind of hides like a ninja. You know, we unconsciously accept these intrusive thoughts and worries as truth. These warnings, what ifs, and worst case scenarios, these sort of ninja worries that hide in the background of our unconscious gain power by staying unseen. And worry feels so real because it activates this part of our body, this alarm that we've had probably since we've been 4, 5, 7, 12 years old. And that alarm is what creates this sense of inability to detect the worries as false. So when we get alarmed in our body, we search for certainty. Because this is what we did when we were a child. We also paralyze the front part of our brain that would tell us these worries are nothing to worry about. So not only do we make more worries when we're alarmed, but we lose the possibility to be able to see these worries as false. And I think part of us unconsciously doesn't want to see them as false because it is providing us with some kind of certainty. When we worry about something, we get certain, more certain about it. And because uncertainty was so painful for us as children, we will accept the uncertainty of worry over just leaving something uncertain. And worry is always about the future because you can't worry about something that's already happened. You can't worry about something that's happened in the past. Worry holds its magic, and I put that in quotation marks, by suspending you in this state of uncertainty, but the promise of certainty with your worry. And in that uncomfortable place, we feel comfortable because that's how we coped as children. When we didn't have any control over the situation, we would make up worries and go up into our heads to avoid this alarm feeling in our body and to try and make the uncertain appear more certain because we hated uncertainty. So this is the paradox of worry and uncertainty. And this paradox of worry and uncertainty, for those of us raised in chaotic homes, this worry becomes a source of comfort in a way. It becomes a source of certainty and it becomes this sort of backhanded support for us, but it winds up hurting us. Of course it hurts us because we're creating all these warnings, what ifs, worst case scenarios, as if they are happening and your body reacts to them as if they might truly happen. And we get all these chemicals in our system, cortisol, norepinephrine, that destabilize us. But when this worry that we create doesn't happen, we also get a hit of feel-good chemicals like dopamine. So when you're a child and you worry that your parent's going to be drunk when you get home and you get home and they're not drunk, you get a rush of dopamine. In a way, worry kind of plays with our neurochemistry. We get so used to controlling worry as best we can or using worry as a form of coping strategy or coping mechanism that it becomes a more familiar place to put the uncertainty rather than just leaving something uncertain. Now, what this creates is an addiction to certainty, which of course we can never have. But as children, we develop this addiction to certainty by worrying. So the anxious mind prefers a predictable pain over unpredictable peace. And this can lead to obsessive behaviors, an attempt to control what can't be controlled. We cope with uncertainty by imagining all these warnings, what ifs, worst case scenarios, because it gives us this sense of certainty. And a sense of certainty in the child is seen as much more protective and secure than just leaving something uncertain, leaving something to the unknown. So this worry is born from a loss of trust in ourselves and in others and the world. So faith is the antidote to that worry. Faith helps us lean into uncertainty without needing to predict or control the future obsessively. Faith allows us to stop writing horror stories and just be there. Just be in that moment. Just be in that state without going, I have to fix this. I have to control this. I can stay in the uncertainty. The worst part of anxiety, what leads us to being more and more anxious, is avoidance. When we avoid what hurts us or what we perceive hurts us, the avoidance just creates more and more uncertainty. Because when it actually does happen or doesn't happen, we don't know. And we try to worry to kind of fix the deck, to fix our future, to fix something that we can't fix. There is something uncontrollable about the future. That's why it's the future. So when you can stay with that uncertainty, with a sense of faith, you start unwriting or overwriting that constant compulsion to worry. Initially, worry appears to be somewhat protective in our child mind, but anxiety undermines your strength over the course of time. Anxiety tells you to avoid, to hide, to quit. It overestimates the threat, and underestimates your ability to handle it. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. Anxiety makes you overestimate threat and underestimate your ability to cope with it. And I'm just going to sit with that for a second because it's so important. It makes you overestimate the threat and underestimate your ability to deal with it. But living with anxiety has already made you resilient. The big lie of anxiety is you can't do it, but you've done it over and over and over. You have faced adversity over and over and over and been able to make your way through it. But the child in you won't tell you that. The child in you will tell you that you have to keep worrying. You have to keep up with this coping strategy. And it only traps you in this cycle of alarm and anxiety that you can't get out of, the alarm anxiety cycle. The bottom line is you're much stronger than your anxiety lets you believe. And the truth is, when hard things happen, you cope, you adapt, you rise. Look at all the things that you've overcome, because everybody's got crap in their life. Look at all the things you've overcome. Now, your body can be alarmed, but your deeper self is capable and strong. And that's one of the things that anxiety won't let you see, because you paralyzed your thinking mind, the part of you that is you, the frontal cortex, the prefrontal cortex, the part of you that really lets you be you. It encodes your personality, how you look at the world, your sense of others, your sense of self. So when we paralyze that prefrontal cortex with worry and cortisol and norepinephrine and all these adrenaline chemicals of stress, we lose who we are. And we age regress back into a time where we were unprepared. We weren't able to handle it. So we stick with that template for our whole lives sometimes. The lie of anxiety is that you can't handle it, because maybe as a child you couldn't handle it. Maybe it was too much for you, but you're an adult now. You can handle things. And I think that's one of the biggest lies of anxiety, is it makes us overestimate threat and underestimate ourselves. Now, as you become aware of your worries and you can see them kind of as something in front of you, you are not your worries. You are the one that observes your worries. And this awareness gives you back some choice. As Viktor Frankl said, there is a space between stimulus and response. And in that space, we can choose. We can choose our own way. And it's important for you to understand that you're no longer the powerless child you once were. You're a capable adult now. As much as the child may tell you that you're not, and you may feel like you're not, but you are. Look at all the things you do. You raise your kids, you go to school, you do all these things, but you do it with 100 pounds of fear on your back. You're doing it. And these worries are just predictions. They're not facts. And seeing them for what they are breaks this alarm anxiety loop. When you can see your thoughts, when you can see your worries, you no longer have to be your worries. Because your default state is to run from uncertainty, run from the future, essentially. You're running from your own projection of the future. That's what you're doing. That's what anxiety does. And of course, you're going to be destabilized because you're running from yourself. So if you can say to yourself, am I safe in this moment? Can you bring yourself into the present moment? Do some tapping, do some breathing, do some self-touch, bring yourself into touch. Sensation will bring you into the present moment. And if you use these physical anchors, you know, your hand on your heart, slowing your breath, come back into the now, try and just feel your feet on the ground. Just come into sensation, because worries depend on this flurry of the mind. It just keeps going and going and going. And as you move into sensation, as you move into the sense in your body, you leave this projected world that you've created in your mind, and you come into the present moment. And the present moment may still be painful. You may still have this alarm in your system, but at least you're one step towards the solution as opposed to just defaulting back into more of the problem, which is just moving back into worry to try and save yourself, which of course just sinks you. You know, I have this analogy about being in a boat and the boat's got a hole in the hull and the water's coming in, and you can bail water, which is kind of like worrying and throwing your worries out into the world. But until you go underneath and patch that hole in the hull, come present in the moment, allow your alarm to be there, allow yourself to feel it, stay present with it, breathe into it, realize that you can handle it, then you really start to break the cycle at its core. And when you break the alarm anxiety cycle, you start seeing a new way of living your life. One of the best ways and one of the best mantras I've ever come up with was sensation without explanation. Allow yourself to feel the sensation of alarm in your body and don't allow the mind to start hooking worries to it. Because as a child, this was your go-to. This was your automatic. You may not have even noticed that there was alarm in your body. But immediately what happens is when you have alarm in your body, to escape that alarm, you go up into your head. This is what happens to you in childhood. You go up into your head and you start to worry. And as you start worrying and getting caught in your head, you don't feel the alarm so much. But you're really just kicking the pain down the road. You're not actually soothing the pain. You're just delaying the pain. So instead of analyzing the thought, feel into your body. Redirect your attention from thinking about the worry into sensing the alarm in your system. And the trick about healing anxiety, and the biggest hint I can give you about healing anxiety, is learn how to feel that alarm and stay with it, because that alarm is the younger version of you. That alarm is the younger version of you asking to be seen, heard, open to, loved, and defended now in a way that they didn't get back then. That is how you heal the ultimate source of your worry, which is the state of alarm in your body. It's the alarm in your body that feeds the worries. So if we heal the alarm, the worries just fade away. And I think it's so critical to understand that it's the alarm in your body that's the real root cause of the problem. The worries we can see. It's like that iceberg analogy I talked about in the last podcast. We can see the worries at the tip of the iceberg, but down below, the alarm that's stuck in your body, that's the real problem. That's what we have to heal in order to heal from anxiety instead of just coping with it. So again, anxiety is truly intolerance of uncertainty, intolerance of the unknown. So if you can slowly and kindly, starting small, without jumping to imagine outcomes, embrace uncertainty. Even if you're having dinner and you've got a menu in your hand, embrace the uncertainty of having this thing over this thing. There's uncertainty everywhere. And if you can start practicing seeing uncertainty for what it is, which is just part of life, if you can see the uncertainty and embrace it, you don't trigger the alarm so much, because that uncertainty when you were younger was horrible. But uncertainty now is just part of life. And if you can start seeing uncertainty as a part of life and embracing it, you're in a much more powerful position than rather than unconsciously feeling the alarm, feeling the uncertainty of something that might happen in the future and just running with it and just creating all these warnings, what ifs, and worst case scenarios that are just going to make you worse. You can embrace uncertainty. You can see uncertainty as the spice of life, as opposed to seeing uncertainty as something you have to run from, because there's uncertainty in just about everything. And if you have to run from uncertainty or go into worry, your life's going to be very uncomfortable. My main point is that healing is about feeling. It's not about thinking. I think in this society of CBT and ACT and all these cognitive therapies, we have this belief that we can think ourselves out of a feeling problem, and we can't. Psychology and psychiatry had that for 50 years to try to believe that we could talk our way out of this anxious feeling. And the anxious feeling is subcortical. It's below the level of the cortex. It's below the level of conscious understanding through language. So why are we trying to use language to heal something that's ultimately feeling-based? We need to use feeling to heal the feeling. So developing this sense of safety in uncertainty, putting your hand on your chest, breathing into it, saying to yourself, sensation without explanation, sensation without explanation. I say it to myself every day, sensation without explanation, because healing comes from shifting perception and feeling from this body held alarm. So when we can allow ourselves to feel this alarm without jumping into our thoughts, this is critical. This is so critical. If we can allow ourselves to be sensation without explanation, to feel this alarm in our bodies without compulsively and relentlessly going into worry, to try and solve the uncertainty, if we can just stay with the certainty of the pain in our system, we start to actually heal the anxiety rather than just learning strategies to cope with it. And I can't emphasize that enough. It's really about being able to stay with the pain of alarm in your system without adding thoughts to it. Sensation without explanation, just staying with the pain. Now, you don't have to stay with the pain for hours at a time. One of the things that I will get people to do is think of what was the best time in your life. What was a time that you felt carefree, you felt free, you felt seen, heard, open to, loved, and defended? When was a time in your life that you felt really good? And when you get into this sensation without explanation, when you get into this pain of alarm, you can bring in the feeling of that great time in your life. And that tends to help you metabolize this sense of alarm that's stuck in your body, because it's a feeling issue. Anxiety is not just a thinking issue. It appears to be the tip of the iceberg. It appears to be the worries that are the problem, but the worries aren't the problem. It's the deeper alarm from old, typically childhood wounds that were never resolved. That's what causes your anxiety. And until we actually address that sense of alarm in the body, we never heal the worries. You can't heal the worries by trying to fix the worries. You have to heal the worries by fixing the root cause of the problem, which is this sense of alarm that is stuck in your body and has probably been there since you were a child. So if you're listening to my stuff, your healing has already begun. You've started seeing the difference between the anxiety in your mind, the worries, the warnings, the what ifs, the worst case scenarios, and the feeling, the sensation of alarm in your body. And you're learning to unmask worry and come back to safety. This is the beginning of a new relationship with yourself. This is the beginning of understanding where this alarm and this anxiety actually come from and how they cycle on each other and how we break the cycle by not allowing the worries and staying with sometimes the pain of the alarm in our system, because the alarm is the root cause of the worries. The alarm is what creates the mind wanting to seek safety in prediction, wanting to seek safety in worry, because that's what you did as a child. But you don't need to do that anymore because you're not a child anymore. So once you start being able to find the alarm in your body, breathe into it, stay with it, you can start to metabolize the root cause of the problem. And when you metabolize the root cause of the problem, you start to truly heal instead of just learning another coping strategy, of which there's very, very many out there. So understand that worry is just an attempt of the mind to make the uncertain appear more certain. And if you don't need certainty, if you can just stay with the sensation of uncertainty that is the alarm in your body that gets revved up when you are faced with a situation that's uncertain for you, and metabolize that, you start metabolizing the root cause of your anxiety as opposed to just trying to fix your worries, which never works. So the bottom line is, can you feel that sense of alarm in your system, in your body? Sometimes you can temper it with a feeling of elation or something that was really good in your life at one time, but being able to stay with it and just watching the mind's compulsive need to go into worry and being able to stay with the root cause, which is this alarm in your body, and then gaining power over time that you no longer have to go into the warnings, what ifs, worst case scenarios of your mind. Over time, you break the alarm anxiety cycle. And that, again, is how you truly heal from anxiety instead of just learning another coping strategy. So that's it for today. And I will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening to the Anxiety RX podcast. I created this show because I don't want you to have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did. And I truly wish I'd known this stuff 30 years ago. It would have changed everything for me. For more support, please explore my best-selling book, Anxiety RX, or my very affordable online program, MBRX. Remember, all anxiety is separation anxiety, and mostly separation from that hurt part of you. So keep holding on to that part of you that hurts, and I'll see you next time.